We bought more in June, and then July happened. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Retail sales rose 7.5% in June, we learned this morning. But grocery store spending was down. Diane Swonk joins us now to make sense of it all, as she always does. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
So retail sales up 7.5%. Is that unequivocally good news?
It certainly was good news for the month. It's not unequivocal because we already know during the month infections surged and many of the stores that people went out to and restaurants and bars in particular have since been shuttered. But the good news was we regained a lot of the ground that we had lost during the height of the lockdowns in May and June as consumers came out to play. What was interesting as well is how consumers actually moved offline. They didn't spend online in the month of June and also pulled back on spending at grocery stores as they could go out to restaurants. That may be something to watch going forward, given the surge in prices at the grocery store we've seen in recent months.
Why would grocery store prices be rising?
What we're seeing out there is everything from the farms that have had to let crops rot on the fields to meat and poultry processors who've been shut down due to COVID, causing bottlenecks for people getting meat, farmers getting meat to the grocery stores, have pushed up prices for consumers quite dramatically, and you've noticed it in your grocery store bills. So even though the overall environment of COVID is deflationary, the thing that matters most, food and shelter, is now getting harder and harder for many households to cover. And that's something we're watching very closely as we're coming to the end of unemployment benefits at the end of July and likely to see them lapse before Congress renews them at some level. We worry about people being able to pay for the very basics of food and shelter going forward.
Diane Swonk, Chief Economist at Grant Thornton. Thanks as always.
Thank you.
We also learned this week that U.S. manufacturing surged 7% in June. Auto production was the biggest winner there. But the thing is, this is last month we're talking about. And a month in 2020 feels like a year in normal times. So since June, COVID-19 cases have picked up again in the U.S. Marketplace's Justin Ho has more on what that could mean for auto producers who are doing so well.
For an auto manufacturer to keep churning out cars, Kristen Jicek at the Center for Automotive Research says manufacturers need healthy demand, healthy supply chains, and healthy workers.
And the outbreaks of cases around the country right now could threaten any one of those three things.
Jicek says consumer demand is holding up for now, but supply chains are starting to see some new disruptions. Last week, the Mexican government limited staffing capacity in the state of Chihuahua.
And there's a heck of a lot of suppliers there.
Health concerns could impact production here in the U.S., regardless of whether states mandate production halts. Independent auto analyst Marianne Keller says we could see some self-imposed shutdowns.
If you haven't got workers, you can't operate a factory no matter what you're told to do.
2 weeks ago, the union at a GM factory in Texas asked the automaker to shut down the plant, citing the growing number of cases in the region. GM says the plant uses protocols designed to keep the virus out of the facility. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. 1.3 million Americans filed for unemployment last week. That was more than expected. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 133 points. That's 0.5%. The S&P 500 down 0.7%. The NASDAQ down 1.1%. 10-year Treasury yield is down this morning at 0.61%. We have some banks reporting earnings this morning as well. Morgan Stanley beat expectations with a second quarter profit. Shares are up 1.1%. Bank of America did better than expected, but says it set aside $4 billion to cover potentially bad loans. Its shares are down 3.8%.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
Europe's top court ruled this morning that European citizens' data is not adequately protected when it is on U.S. servers, meaning U.S. tech companies won't be allowed to move that data to the U.S. It was a victory for privacy advocates and a defeat for tech companies. Marketplace's Nova Sappho has the details.
The ruling from the European Court of Justice invalidates a transatlantic data protection agreement known as Privacy Shield, which was put in place in 2016. Facebook used that agreement to transfer data between Europe and its U.S. servers, where that data is processed. An Austrian privacy advocate challenged Facebook in European court, saying once data is transferred to American servers, it is subject to U.S. surveillance laws, which do not meet European Union privacy protection standards. The EU High Court agreed, striking down Privacy Shield, injecting uncertainty into worldwide digital commerce, and affecting thousands of companies that rely on the smooth transfer of data across the Atlantic. Everything from internet giants to brick-and-mortar retailers, which store the data of European customers. A new transatlantic agreement may now be necessary, or companies might have to physically locate data servers in Europe. Privacy advocates argue the best way to resolve the problem is for the U.S. to change its surveillance laws to meet European privacy standards. I'm Nova Sappho for Marketplace.
Joe Biden, Elon Musk, Uber, Apple, just a few of the verified Twitter accounts of public figures and companies that were hacked yesterday. The hacked accounts temporarily posted tweets promoting a Bitcoin scam, asking people to send Bitcoins and promising their money would be doubled. The posts have since been taken down, but at one point, the account tied to that Bitcoin link had received about $100,000. Joseph Cox is a journalist with Vice's Motherboard.
In this case, the people who do this sorts of hacking, they are primarily motivated by money, but they're not actually the most sophisticated hackers. A similar sort of group may try to take over the accounts of telecom employees so then they can get hold of your phone number, that sort of thing. They will try to take over Twitter accounts, which have one or just two letters in the username, and then sell that for as little as hundreds of dollars, up to a few thousand. The idea that they only made 100 grand, it does seem very strange looking at the scale, but that's sort of how these hackers operate.
Joseph Cox there from Vice. Sports fans have something to be excited about. Start of pro baseball and basketball coming up. Sports have been mostly absent for the past few months, but mobile sports betting, oh, that has carried on with a creative touch. Where there is a will, there is a way. WHYY's Miles Bryan reports from Philadelphia.
When the NBA and NCAA went on pause back in March, Matthew Nelson figured his habit of putting 10 or 20 bucks on the game would too. But after a couple weeks of quarantine boredom, the Philly resident decided to log back into his sports betting app just to see what's there. He found a ping pong match broadcast live from Russia. It wasn't a sport he'd paid much attention to before, but
they have some serious skill. They'll hold the paddle upside down in their hands. They'll do trick shots. They're like diving across the floor. It's really entertaining, honestly.
This spring, Nelson was betting on a couple of matches a week. He explained his betting strategy as we watched a match from 6 feet apart on his laptop outside.
So I took Sergei Kuzmin because I liked his name. That's usually how I go off the names because I don't speak Russian to read up on these guys.
Bettors across the 11 states plus D.C., where online sports betting is up and running, have been swept up in this pandemic ping pong craze. Rush Street Interactive says table tennis was its number one bet on sport in New Jersey and Pennsylvania in May and June. For all sports, the mobile betting operator handled more than $13 million in Pennsylvania in May alone. Table tennis's newfound luster has caught some in the industry by surprise. Melanie Gross is with Caesars.
I think there are people that are interested in sports betting and are interested in whatever content they can get, right? So it's a learning lesson for all of us.
Despite the excitement, table tennis is nowhere near making up the revenue lost by the closure of major sports. Pennsylvania officials say the total amount of bet money taken by online sports books dropped by about a third from March to May. Clyde Barrow is a gaming industry consultant.
This is just something to try to keep some level of interest going with customers.
Matthew Nelson says lately he's been betting less on table tennis and more on NASCAR and golf. Still, one silver lining of his ping pong period, his own skills with the racket have much improved. In Philadelphia, I'm Miles Bryan for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishor with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.